Yeah, you should. This is another bit of collective responsibility. At the beginning of each class, if anybody sees that I haven't turned on my recorder, just jump up and say, "You haven't turned on your recorder." Okay, now we are recording. I'll put it back in my pocket. So I will record every lecture and post it on the on this website here. As soon after class as I can. Usually it's immediately after class, unless I have a meeting or something. Now, the purpose of the podcast is not to make it easy to simply skip class. I do think there's a difference between sitting in a class, seeing a person talking to you with eye contact, having the kind of collective experience of sharing in the process of hearing about the ideas. That's different from just sitting and listening to it on your iPod. And I'm not proposing that this become an electronic course that you can just listen to in cyberspace. I do, however, believe that having the podcast available enhances the educational experience in a couple of ways. For some of you, listening to it in the classroom without taking notes, just focusing on what I'm saying, and then taking notes by listening to it a second time, will prove a much better way to assimilate the material than to only have one shot at hearing. When it comes time at the end of the semester and before the midterms to review, for some of you, listening to some of the lectures again will be a really useful way of reviewing the material. But also, I recognize that your lives are complicated. There will be times when you'll have legitimate reasons why it makes sense to skip a class, that actually optimizes your overall sanity and ability to cope with the pressures. If you have an exam that's immediately after this class and you are desperately studying for it, I think it might make sense not to come to class that day. And I don't feel that's some violation of our contract, you know, our human contract of contact and conversation, that when some pressing reason comes up, you skip class and then listen to it on the podcast. And that's why, another reason why I put the podcasts up online. Okay, there are a few classroom rules which I want to share with you. These aren't esoteric rules. Turning off cell phones, I think, is obvious. But the next three I really do want to insist on. No texting in class. Once the class starts, no emailing. And no web browsing. I do think it's a very useful thing for many students to take notes in class on a laptop or a tablet or whatever, to take your notes digitally rather than just by hand, because it means you can archive them, you can organize them, you can go back to your notes and add more stuff. If you take notes in class and then you listen to the podcast again, you can have your notes with you and you can comment on your notes. You can have a kind of internal dialogue. So I'm a big fan of people taking digital notes, but I really dislike it when people are not part of the class, that they're doing other things. Multitasking in a lecture is just not on. So the two teaching assistants have been deputized by me to stand at the back of the class where they can have a clear view of all laptops that are being used. And if they see anybody violating these rules, they have my, not just permission, but I've told them they really should come and tap you on the shoulder to remind you that you're violating a norm, a class rule. I think we're in an interesting period. So here I'm going to make a sociological comment about this particular set of rules. We're in an interesting period culturally because the internet and electronic media are still relatively new, right? So there are plenty of people around whose lives were fully formed and they had their sense of what's appropriate and inappropriate created before it was ever possible to surf the web during a lecture, to check your email in a meeting. So we're in an era where we have overlapping generations of people who have been socialized and grown up under different technological conditions. And the cultural norms, what's considered bad behavior or good behavior, have not really settled down. You know, I don't think that there are clear norms about that. The word norm, means cultural rules about how you should behave under different contexts. And I just think we're in this interesting situation around a whole bunch of things that we'll be talking about this semester. Around gender, very interesting fact about the current world is that the norms of appropriate behavior around gender are in flux, and it's not always clear how one should behave. And that creates interesting cultural tension, and it's an interesting social process by which new norms get created and consolidated. Well, one way to make norms have more force is to talk about them, make them explicit. Say, yes, this is our collective understanding about how we will, what good behavior means in this context. And partially what I'm doing here by firmly announcing no email, no surfing, is I'm perhaps in a rear guard way because I'm in that overlapping generation that a person who's fully comfortable with all the electronic stuff, but grew up without it. I'm desperately trying to create norms that will then become taken for granted. Yeah, it would be nice, in my view, if, you know, 10 years from now, people would just think it was bad behavior to be in a meeting or in a lecture and be typing away, sending email. But we're not there yet because lots of people do this. And they do it without embarrassment, which that's the key signal. If you do something that violates a norm and you're caught, you're embarrassed. If you don't even think you're violating a norm, you just do it because you don't think there's anything inappropriate about it. Okay, those are the rules for the classroom. One announcement. So every year for the past 14 years, early in the semester, I conduct what I call a socio-cultural bike tour of Madison. This is mostly for new students and faculty, new people to the Madison community, but a fair number of people in the sociology department just, they think it's fun. You're all invited. If you don't have a bike, the place where we meet, which is the parking lot behind Budget Bicycle, 1230 Regent Street, they rent bikes. And I work out a deal that they rent them at cheaper than their usual rental. I think it's $10 for the day at Budget Bicycle. So you don't need a bike. The bike ride has three segments. If you do the whole, all three segments, it takes about 6 hours and includes going out to an apple orchard south of Madison to buy apples. If you go just for the first segment, we stop at Olbrich Gardens for a picnic lunch at noon. So we start at 10, we get to Olbrich Gardens around noon and have lunch, and then come back towards town, and that ends the first segment. So I encourage as many of you who would like to, especially if you are new to Madison. If you city, one of the things we do is we bike by some fancy restaurants so that if you have any affluent family members that come to visit and they ask, well, where should I take you out to dinner? You can say, oh, I've heard there's this, and they'll take you to one of the good restaurants in Madison. Finally, one last One last thing. I want to try an experiment in this class, which may seem a little odd to some of you. It may seem odd because it probably is odd. I've done this with my graduate courses, which are small, and with one small undergraduate course that I taught last year that only had about 25 students in it. And it's the following. At the beginning of it, so I want to do this as an experiment for, let's say, the rest of September, and then we can see if this seems useful or not. What I've done in these other classes is at the very beginning of class, for 3 minutes, have 3 minutes of silent meditation. And I mean real meditation, you know, breathing meditation, focusing on breath, eyes closed with a bell to start and a bell to end, tracking your breath in and out for 3 minutes. Now, 3 minutes is actually a pretty long time. Most people have never meditated in their lives for 3 minutes. 3 minutes is a pretty long time. I was a complete skeptic about the value of meditation. It's not something that's part of my long history of personal growth and development. But a few years ago, for reasons of being supportive of a friend, I participated in a 6-week meditation course, and to my surprise, found a regular practice of meditation extremely beneficial at a personal level. And when I introduced it in the classroom, I think nearly every student, Emmanuel can testify, he's been in classes, most students actually found it pretty productive. The idea, there's really several different things going on here. The idea in the classroom use of meditation at the beginning is it creates a buffer between the outside world that you're all coming out of and the classroom experience. It kind of brings us all together in shared silence and focuses attention on the task at hand, which is engaging in the material which we'll be discussing. And 3 minutes turns out to be long enough to bring that focus of attention. The research on meditation, there's a professor here at Wisconsin, Richard Davidson, some of you might have heard of him, in the psychology department, who's a neuroscientist who does the neuroscience of meditation. What his research shows is that regular meditation actually changes aspects of your brain. It changes brain structure. It's not just that it calms you, or which it may or may not. It actually changes over time your capacity for focused attention. And it does that in a very minor way, even when it's done just for 3 minutes in the context of a class. So it's something which I would like us to do as a regular practice. And as a way of beginning it, now I just realized I have this logistical problem because the same instrument which I use for the podcasts also has my 3-minute timer. I don't know if it will, we'll just see. I don't know if it's possible to have both of these. I think what I need to do is pause this.